The Sustainable Voice, bringing you big successes from small places worldwide.
Hey, welcome back to Sustainable Voice. This is Ashish Sangrachi, your host. So, you know, we talk about big successes in small places, and I have to show you something. I have to share with you, rather. You know, we talk a lot about what's happening in South America, what's happening in Kenya. I don't really talk about parts of Asia that much, you know, and I wish I could. Well, today is different. I want to talk to you about a big success that has been replicated in other parts of India, but it started in the Periyar Wildlife Concession and the Periyar Wildlife Reserve in the southern part of India. This is a small game reserve, a tiger reserve, that's in Kerala, in the one of the southern states of India. And, you know, what's really cool is that they have taken the idea of anti-poaching to a different level. Before I tell you what they've done, let's talk about insanity and the definition of insanity, right? Think about that. What is the definition of insanity? Well, it's doing something that didn't achieve the result you wanted twice and third times and four times and five times and somehow expecting a different result. Didn't work the first 5,000 times. Well, what are we talking about? Poaching. Anti-poaching for that. You know, among the private enterprise, and this is going to be a very controversial topic, so, you know, feel free to chime in whenever you watch this. And, you know, this is controversial because there's so many hard and fast opinions on either side. But I want to actually ask all of you something. Just because somebody says they are against poaching, or somebody says we are taking steps for anti-poaching, you know, we are fighting the battle, is it actually working? Let me pose you a second question. If it was actually working, would the conversation about legalizing poaching or painting ivory pink actually even be entertained? Think about that. Those are two key questions that you got to think about, right? And that's what is the premise of our conversation today. The hard and fast rule, if you are a country or a government or a ministry or a reserve or a warden, is if you find a poacher in your game reserve hunting tiger, hunting elephant, hunting lion, hunting, you know, wherever you are in the world, you know, wherever you are in the world, it's either shoot to kill or let's go arrest this poacher and put him in life for the rest of his or her life. Let's go shoot and kill this poacher to make an example. And you know what happens? Another poacher shows up. And then another. And then another. And they get younger and younger each time too. You know why that is? I believe it's because they become martyrs. You see, we're approaching anti-poaching the way we approach anti-terrorism. You go and take a look at somebody who is trying to do some pretty horrific things in this world. You either shoot and kill them or you arrest them, but you make an example out of them, thinking, if I can make an example out of this person, nobody else will dare try. It doesn't work. You see, when you actually sit down, and I've actually sat down with three separate anti-poachers and I've chronicled them for articles and I've talked to them, the number one thing that has come across is that they're not doing it because they want to be poachers. That's clear, right? You know, when you sit three or four people in a room and you ask them their opinion, you rarely get four consecutive opinions that match almost word for word unless they rehearse the answer ahead of time. Almost what we call the prisoner's dilemma, right? Where you basically bring people into a police station, you put them in separate rooms, and you're going to try to break them because they rehearse the answer, and you know that they're in collusion. You want to break the collusion. You think that these anti-poachers, or these poachers you've caught, rather, that they're in collusion. They figured out a story that, hey, you know what? We're going to tell them a story about how we want to make sure we get rid of every elephant on this planet. We want to make sure we get rid of what's left of tigers. Get rid of what's left of rhino, get rid of what's left of any other endangered species. That's not the case. They're always wanting to do something else, but they also have to put food on the table, right? That was the key thing. So if you're going to make an example out of them and say, well, you know what, if I catch you as a poacher, we're going to shoot and kill. We're going to arrest you and put you in prison for life. We're going to punish you, punish your family, punish your children, punish your neighborhood, punish your community, punish all everybody you've ever known, your parents, your uncle, your aunt, anybody that's associated with you, either by name or by profession. We're going to punish them. It hasn't worked poaching rates are still on the increase. Now, yes, there are success stories, specifically with gorilla populations in Uganda and Rwanda and other places where they're starting to increase. There are success stories with black rhino in certain pockets, but there's a far and few in between. Case an example. Let's say you are a warden of a famous game reserve in Africa. You catch an anti, you know, you're an anti-poacher patrol and you catch a poacher in your reserve. He has now shot a rhino. He is going after the ivory. You catch this poacher and say, do not do this again. I am going to put you in prison. You are going to be executed, or you're going to spend the rest of your life in prison, whatever the case may be. And then you stand up proudly, puff your chest out and say, look, don't you dare do this. You know what happens? Five more show up the next day and the day after. Even to the point where it's been reported years ago in Kenya, in one of the rhino sanctuaries, that a poacher actually shot a 45-year-old rhino, not for the ivory, just because they wanted to. You see, you start creating, emboldening them, started actually galvanizing the other side to say, no, you know what, out of spite, we're going to do this. Well, this is the little success, or the big success, that Perrier Wildlife Reserve stumbled upon. One that's actually quite effective. One that's actually worked. So they took this approach that said, well, if we catch you as a poacher, and this has happened several times, this program just ended in Periyar, but it's now to be replicated in other places in India. But they had the model, the local wild ministry had the model that basically said, and it was a Tiger Foundation that said, if you're caught as a poacher, if you commit to letting us rehabilitate you, and putting you to work in ecotourism, we will drop the charges. Or we'll have some sort of penance where you can keep your life. Or some sort of penance where you can actually make a living for your family involved through tourism. Now, it's amazing because skepticism runs on both sides, right? So you're listening to me right now saying, God, this is crazy. Why would you do that? Just shoot and kill them. What's the point? I promise you, they feel the exact same way. What's the catch? How come I'm still alive? How come I'm not in prison right now? What's the catch? What do I have to do? Why is this happening? And long and behold, it's because of the fact that they are being shown that, okay, you are agreeing to do this. We are committing you to doing this. We're going to hold this over your head, but we're going to give you a chance to actually look forward. We're going to give you a chance to actually move forward, to put your life together. Now, they've chronicled several of these poachers that they caught in Perrier. And the ones that were rehabilitated successfully, and look, it's not perfect, but the ones that were rehabilitated through Perrier, some of them have children that have now gone on and gotten advanced degrees, that have exceeded what their potential probably could have been based on their circumstances. And now, because of work in tourism, they actually exceeded it. Think about that for a second, right? Think about anywhere you may have been lucky to be in Africa or Asia where you're on safari somewhere, even in Latin America. But let's talk specifically about Africa and Asia. Let's talk about when you're in these reserves and you know poaching is an issue. And you start talking to a member of the camp, you know, somebody who works there or your guide or a warden, and they start talking to you about how they used to be a poacher and they work in tourism. Now you ask them, how did you actually get into tourism? How did you get into it? And I know this from experience because I chronicled those poachers. And if I take that sample size and extrapolate it to 1,000 poachers, I'll probably get the same answer more often than not. Serendipity. Well, that's not the word they used. They just got tired of worrying about whether they're going to go home at night or not. So that it almost like they willed it to say, I'd like to do something else. And of course, the avenue was open. The portal was open. Now, I know this is easier said than done. Some of you are going to watch this and you're going to go, God, this is utopia. This is a pipe dream. This is not going to work. Yeah, you may be right. But what we're doing right now isn't working either. So what do you have to lose? What we're doing right now is moving the needle. But take a look at the stats. It's not working. If we're having conversations as a global society about legalizing poaching, if we're having conversations about sawing off the horns of a rhino as the only means to protect it, as the only means to keep poachers away by taking away the very thing that they want, by sawing it off. If that's your answer, we're lost. Now, you could sit here and tell me, well, you know, we're not hurting the rhino. It's not the point. Imagine if you were that creature, and let's say you had an ear that big like mine, and a poacher wanted your ears. Are you willing to tell me that if my ear, cutting off my ear didn't hurt, I would be okay with you cutting off my ear to save my life from poachers? If my life was in danger, sure. If my life was under duress at that very minute, sure. But as a step, a preventative step, you're going to saw off my horn? That's your idea of conservation? I'm not judging on whether it's right or wrong. I'm simply asking how we got here. I'm simply saying if this is the conversation we're having, then clearly we've got to actually look at what was happening in India and try to replicate that in more places and more sanctioned with more assistance and more government involvement. Think about this. You know, the private sector in travel tourism is doing so much great work, whether you're a camp owner, whether you're a travel company, the ones that work in the ecotourism space, the ones that work in the sustainable travel space, the ones that are really walking the walk. They're doing some amazing, amazing work. But they can't do it alone. It's like pushing water uphill with a broomstick. They can't do it alone. What Periyar Wildlife Reserve actually figured out and what they put in place was a symbiotic relationship between the foundation, between the ministry, and between the poachers. To say, here's the catch. We're going to rehabilitate you. But you're going to work for us. It's not going to be easy. And we're going to actually then put you to work as guides in the ecotourism world. And you're going to be able to provide for your family in a better way than you were doing. Now think about this for a second. If I were to sit here in front of you and tell you that this was an idea 10 years ago, 20 years ago, you'd laugh and go, come on. Is that really your idea of success? It worked. There was an article that I was actually reading, one that I shared with my producer. And this article, it was amazing. Think about this. Four separate poachers that were rehabilitated saved 232 animals. 232 cases of poaching that were solved because they were patrolling as part of their community right, as part of their involvement beyond being guides, as part of the prevention involvement. Think about that. It's not by coincidence, if I shift back to Africa, it's not by coincidence that some of the lowest poaching rates in all of Africa are in places where the community is heavily involved. It's also not by coincidence that during a downturn like Ebola or COVID, where travel tourism to safari destinations really drops, that you see a ramp up in poaching because it's the only industry where demand exceeds supply. Take South Africa, for example. Multiple cases have occurred in the last 2 years, 5 years, 10 years, especially during downturn years, where the poacher that's caught is a ranger in a specific part of a reserve. The person who is paid to keep watch over the reserve is the one who's caught as a poacher. Now, I guess you're going to, you know, I can only imagine you're hearing that saying, well, you just contradicted yourself. You just told me that this person was a ranger and now they're a poacher as well. Yes. That is true. However, I'm talking about the inverse. This person was a ranger. This person had no incentive to be a ranger beyond just a job. What Periyar Wildlife Reserve has set up is an incentive that focuses on the provision of life to the family of the poacher, now ex-poacher, through education, through livelihood, through home and board, through pride in work, through consistent, gainful employment, and most importantly, through results, through accountability. Right? Think about this. What Periyar figured out and what other reserves that have now copied, and amazingly, mostly in India, not anywhere else really yet, and that's what I want to talk to you about, is that it should be other places. What they figured out is that if I am a poacher and I am actually going out and, of course, you know, going after ivory. I'm doing it because of a means to an end. I'm not doing it because I get joy out of doing it. I'm doing it because I have to put food on the table. So if I'm doing it out of desperation, then how do we take the opposite of that? So they figured out that if we rehabilitate the poacher, if we can show them tangible results of the impact their employment, the impact their involvement is having, and show them results, it engages them. Think about this, okay? Think about where you live. Think about the community you're in. Doesn't matter where you are in the world listening to this. Think about where you live. Now, I want you to think about the conversation you have with inner cities. Everybody has a poor part of the community, right? Everybody has a part of the community that is below poverty levels, that is suffering, that is taking the lion's share of the struggle, right, in the community. Now, you go through there and you say, here, don't beg. Don't beg for money, but here's money. Don't steal. Here, I'll give you food. Don't go robbing these places. Here, I'll give you a home. Don't do bad things. Does it work? Or do you go to them and say, listen, how would you like to be involved in the regentrification of this area? How would you like to be involved in the process of pulling up your entire community? How would you like to be involved and be held accountable to the ability to change your life? Not an easy conversation. I get it. You're going to get laughed out of half the rooms you go into until it works for one person, and then two, and then three, and then four, and so forth. That's what's happened in Perrier. The very first poacher they caught and they tried this out on was skeptical, beyond skeptical, saying, no, come on, what? There's got to be a catcher. What are you going to do? This doesn't make sense. You're going to release me? Seriously? You're going to put me to work? You're not going to put me in jail? Come on. Seriously? That can't be. That definitely cannot be. What's the catch? Till they got that first paycheck. Till they saw what they were providing for their kids. Till they had peace of mind that they were able to come home that night or that week or that day or that month. And whenever they left the house to go work again, there was not this singular worry about whether or not they're going to come home again. There was peace of mind. All of a sudden, accountability stepped in. Pride of work stepped in. I'm willing to bet that poacher you converted wouldn't willingly or as easily go back to poaching. Case in point, take a look at that reserve, Periyar Reserve in India. Through every downturn India has had, and India's tourism is not setting the world on fire, right? In its highest point, it made up only 1% of the country's GDP. So while the country is busy, it's not like going to other parts of the world that are absolutely just establishments for ecotourism and safaris and whatnot. Right, especially the southern part of India, right? You talk about people who go to India. Let's say 10 travelers go to India, 8 or 9 are going to go to Rajasthan in the north. How many are going to come to Periyar in the south? Europeans more so, of course. You know, there's different levels. Of course, it's growing and whatnot. But how many are going to come there in relation to how many go up north? It's a quarter, a fraction. On a good day, it's not even half. Yet they're going. And they're there. So you're taking a reserve that isn't even the staple of tourism in its own country, and you're trying out a model that worked. Now, let me explain to you how some of these poachers work in Perrier, right? So the typical poacher in Safari Africa or in other parts of the world would use a weapon of some kind, right? Whatever it could be. It could be from a gun to any kind of a trap, a snare trap, whatever the case may be, right? All sorts of different things. These guys use salt licks, and they use sulfur on salt licks as a method. One of many methods, and of course, conventional methods too. So clearly there's intent behind what they're willing to do, and not good intent. But you're talking about converting people because you see that they were actually converted to behave like this. They were not people that want to behave like this. That model works. Again, it's not perfect. There's still levels of corruption. There's still people who are going to tell you what you want to hear. It is not perfect. But I go back to what I said earlier. Show me a better way. Show me what's actually working. Show me what is consistently working, and I don't mean private enterprise because there's some great stuff happening there. Show me what's consistently happening where you have the assailant, in this case the poacher, the ministry or the government, and private enterprise all coming together, and the community as well, all coming together with one purpose, speaking in unison. When's that happened? Now tell me when that's happened or not, and now tell me how difficult that is, in a country that has a population of 1.3 billion people. How do you get consistency in a country like that? Right? Think about that. Think about what that means. If you look at the safari destinations in the world and look at the guides and you talk to your guides, have a conversation with them. They all love being guides. I would be hard pressed for you to find anybody in any place that says, oh, I hate being a guide. I hate meeting people and showing them my country. Well, what's nice about tourism is that those people who don't like doing it aren't in the industry to begin with. The funny thing is most of those people aren't poachers either. That's the amazing thing. There's very few that turned down this offer in Periyar. The ones that turned it down are the ones that weren't offered in the first place because they didn't fit the mold for the program, right? So again, not perfect. There's bad apples in every bucket. But this is a conversation you want to have, right? Again, and I know this is a controversial topic. I know not everybody's going to agree with me. I totally get that. Not everybody's going to agree with me. I get that. But that's the beauty of this. It's a conversation. I don't care if you don't agree with me. I expect you not to agree with me. I only ask you to think about this. What is working perfectly right now? If we're talking about legalizing poaching and all the other things that I said before, if we're at that stage, then isn't it time to have this kind of a conversation? Isn't it time? So now, of course, your next question might be, well, how do we even do this? Well, it's not easy. But if other reserves in India are replicating what Periyar did, because Periyar's project has ended, it was successfully completed. If other reserves are copying what Periyar is doing, well, then clearly the formula isn't rocket science. Complicated? Yes. Rocket science? No. But you've got to actually have an accountable model for the poacher. You got to have a model that shows a path forward. You can't just come in and say, we're going to rehabilitate poachers and give them jobs. No, not quite. We got to rehabilitate them, hold them accountable to that rehabilitation, and then put them to work in tourism saying, look, these charges that we have against you, which very well could end your life or alter it in a horrific way going forward for you and your family, are going to be put to the side as long as you maintain this. Now what that morphed into is those same people that worked the tourism now working the other side with helping to catch poachers. It also came into the part where they're now understanding that if all the wildlife is gone in that reserve, they don't have a job anymore. Now they don't have a job anymore. They don't even have a job in poaching anymore. Now what do you do? Again, what I said earlier, very few people that work in tourism as guides or naturalists hate it. They all love it. And I know all is a universal word, but they do. I've been traveling around for 40 years. I've yet to find one person out in the field that says, I hate being a naturalist. I hate being a guide. You know why? They're gone in 6 months. They don't last anyway. So in a poacher, you have somebody who knows the lay of the land. You have somebody who actually understands how the land works, understands the intricacies of the ecosystem, understands how the animals behave, understands how the balance of nature is protected in there because they violate that balance every single time they go out. They understand how it works. What better guide is there than that? There's no history book required for that. Only polish. All the training's already there. They're just on the wrong side. So it's a matter of changing that. It's a matter of being able to change the narrative. To change the narrative to say, we deserve to try better. We need to try better. This is the whole part of what this whole mission is about. Let's take Periyar's model, Periyar Tiger Reserve's model. Let's replicate it, not just in India. Let's replicate it in Cambodia, in Thailand. Let's replicate it in other parts of India. Let's replicate it in East Africa. Let's replicate it in Southern Africa, in South Africa. Let's replicate it in every safari destination. Let's use it to build tourism even further in West Africa. Let's use that model with fishermen to protect what's in the Galapagos Islands in South America. Let's use that model to protect what's left of the Amazon jungle in South America. Let's use that model to protect what's left of the rainforest in Central America. Let's use that model to protect what's left of the Arctic Wildlife Refuge. Let's use that model to protect what's left of other parts of the world. It doesn't just have to be wildlife, it's other parts. But taking your villain, taking that villain, instead of saying, I'm going to shoot you and kill you and make an example out of you, or I am going to actually put you in prison for the rest of your life to make an example out of you, which clearly hasn't worked. Let's try a different model. Now think about this. I want to add this element to you as well, okay? Those of you who travel as well as I do, you know how safari camps work all over the world. You also know how difficult the last 2.5 years have been for some of these camps in different parts of the world, especially in places where the borders are just opening right now. I want to tell you a story about a camp owner that I remember in Kenya. He, and a couple of them, but this one in particular, was telling me the story. He was really just, he was distraught. He was at a point of no return where he had to let go of his staff because he didn't have the funds to pay them anymore. This was a safari camp in a certain part of Kenya. He couldn't pay them anymore. He said, the money's finished. I can't keep this going. But the reason he was distraught was not because of the money. It was because he knew he had hired from the community. He was in a conservancy, which was a community-based conservancy. He had hired from the very community that owns the land, that very people that own the land, he hired from them. And now he was letting them go. And he knew they were going to go back to hunting off the land. They were going to go back to using snare traps to hunt, not to kill for poaching, but to hunt for food. But because of the equipment they used, there was very likely that they were going to be mistaken for poachers. And his biggest concern was not when he could hire them back or whether or not he would survive as a camp. The biggest question was whether or not they'd be alive when he got ready to hire them back. Or would they be mistaken for poachers and shot and killed because that was the policy of the country? Or put in prison for life because that was the policy of the country? Or you name it. Now, again, there's no perfect science. I hate poachers as much as you do, probably more. Right? I'm the same person who doesn't agree with trophy hunting. I'm the same person who doesn't agree with hunting of any kind. I don't judge people on it. That's my opinion. But think about that for a second. Think about that conversation, that worry he has. That's our own policies coming back to bite us during our hardest time because it's a one-size-fit-all policy for something that doesn't have one size, for something that comes in different sizes and shapes and has different creatures. So as I end this podcast, I want to tell you, and I end this episode, I want to tell you that I want you to have an open mind. I want you to research Periyar Tiger Reserve. I want you to research their rehabilitation program. I want you to think about what I'm saying. I want you to really think about it. And I want you to see how we keep this conversation going.
Thank you for listening to The Sustainable Voice. If you have a success story of your own, please reach out and share it with us. We'd love to hear from you. See you next time.